Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, December 28th, 2011. The last This Show Is So Gay of 2011. I'm Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line at ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn about all the fun things happening with our little gay radio show. Go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we like you. For our last show of the year, it is, of course, jam-packed. We have got to get started. Hey, first guest, are you ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right, let me introduce you. Featured in the HBO documentary Asians Aloud, Kit Yan tells stories through slam poetry from the lens of a queer and transgender Asian American from Hawaii who travels all over the world on tour. New York Magazine describes his art as knockout spoken word, while Curve Magazine calls out his incredible slam poetry. Kit's work has also been taught at universities all over the world, from Singapore to San Francisco State to Harvard. Kit is on Campus Pride's top 25 LGBT college campus speakers and artists hot list and is dedicated to creating positive social change. Kit spoke to over 200,000 folks from the stage from the 2009 National Equality March, performed on the 2009 San Francisco Pride main stage, and earned a top 3 spot at the 2010 National Queer Slam. Kit Yan is also the first ever Mr. Transman 2010. Kit Yan, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hi, Ken. Thank you so much for having me.
We have so much to talk about. And we should say from the start, we should highlight how impressive it is that you've mustered up the energy to do this interview, given what an oppressive, arid climate you're sitting in right now. I know this must be so difficult for you, Kit, there. Now, tell everyone, where is it that you're sitting right now?
I'm actually in Honolulu.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a rough gig you got going on there, Kit. Let me tell you.
I did. I actually have already been in the water today.
I have never cut an interview so short in the history of the show, but I guess we'll keep going because you're here. Welcome to the show. Are you ready? We have so much to talk about.
Oh, I'm so excited. It's great to be on the air with you.
It's so lovely to have you. When did you, Kit Yan, when did you first know that you were good with words?
No one has ever asked me that before.
Yay!
I actually, on one of my trips home here, I went back into my journals to dig up some, just some history, and I found a bunch of poems from around the kindergarten, first grade age, 5 or 6, and I was writing about, like, my complicated friendships on the playground. They're very dramatic poems about my relationships on the playground.
That's fantastic. And then did someone say, hey, these are really good, kindergarten Kit Yan?
No.
No.
But I did do my first spoken word piece at the age of 9 in like one of those competitions where you performed against lots of people. Like,
oh, wow.
Kind of performance and stuff.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I did a cover of that peanut butter prying mouth open king poem. You know,
I have no idea what that is.
Okay.
I gotcha.
And I did it as a group piece with two of my friends, and we were like on stage, and we had choreographed it.
Oh my!
To show us, you know, prying the king's mouth open.
There was some drama there at 9 years old.
I know. I had a lot to process through.
That's what this show is for, Kit. We can work through it by the end of this interview. I promise you. For folks that don't know what slam poetry is, and I don't want to call anybody out, anybody who perhaps said to me in the past 48 hours, like my mother, hey, what's slam poetry? How would you describe it to folks?
Well, I guess I refer to myself as a slam poet sometimes, a spoken word artist, mm-hmm. a performance artist. It's a theatrical form of reading poetry, and for the most part, I probably think of myself as a poet and a storyteller. So
okay.
A lot of my poetry is telling personal stories or funny stories or everyday stories.
And how do you get in the mindset that you're, because it's not just that you're writing them, you are up there performing them. How do you get into that headspace to perform a piece of your poetry?
Well, sometimes I guess I view it sometimes as acting. I'm sort of channeling the emotions or feelings or the memories and mm-hmm. smells that inspired me to write whatever piece that I'm performing. So a lot of times I'm going back to that place, or If I'm visiting an older piece, I might update it and edit it and have it reflect more of what I'm feeling currently. So I'm always sort of trying to get back to the inspiration that I'm writing about or with.
Can you talk a little bit about your process? Because, again, as I said, you're not just writing things. A lot of the things that you write, I would assume that you know in your head you're going to be speaking them aloud. How does that contribute to your writing process? Do you write differently knowing that you're likely going to say it at one point?
I absolutely do. I don't always write pieces that are meant to be staged, but for the most part, when I write a piece, a lot of what goes through my mind is, how does this sound? And what are the feelings that I'm sort of like going through or portraying that I will eventually be experiencing with someone else? I don't really have control over what someone thinks about my poetry or what they will feel, but it does run through my mind that the sound and the imagery that I use will, you know, heavily inform someone else's experience of the work. And a lot of times, I'm sort of borrowing material from those around me. I mean, stories of my family or friends or what's going on in the world, and sort of like commenting on them or retelling a story.
Now, you mentioned not having control over what people are. I would imagine you've had people come to you and say, "This is what I got from that poem," and you're thinking, "That is so not what I meant at all."
Once in a while, yeah.
Are you tempted to say, no, that wasn't about a dog. That was about peanut butter in the king's mouth.
I don't think I've ever said that to somebody.
Okay.
But I definitely know that people experience work in the way that they or their bodies know how to.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of beautiful. In terms of live performance, not actually being able to control that and having folks interpret and experience completely on their own. Not completely, but you know, on their own as part of it.
And we did ask for some listener questions for you, and this was my favorite question that someone wrote in. Can you please ask Kit, is there such a thing as bad poetry, and what does it look like?
Oh my gosh, that question is so hard.
But yeah, I have to imagine that you've been at some events and you've heard something and said, oh, that's not good. Or maybe you haven't. You find that inner beauty of every poem. Which one are you?
Oh, I totally do find the inner beauty.
Yay!
Of every poem.
I love that answer. So according to Kit, there is no such thing as bad poetry. We're putting that out there.
I totally agree with that. I mean, everything has a purpose, and it's totally, you know, beautiful to the person that wrote it. And I imagine that some of my poems other people do not understand or resonate with. So I'm totally mushy.
Yeah.
About it.
We'll take it. It's almost New Year's. You can be mushy. We love that here. I would imagine that the natural born enemy of a spoken word poet is a root canal. Would that be fair to say?
Well, I just had a root canal.
I know.
So I can comment on
I
that
do my research.
My root canal was not actually that painful.
Okay. So you recovered, and you were right back on the stage pretty quick.
I recovered. I had a great oral surgeon. Everything was really awesome.
Okay. We were worried. We're worried about these things. Now, I mentioned in the bio that yours is the lens, and this is from your website. What a fantastic sentence this is. Yours is the lens of a queer and transgender Asian American from Hawaii who travels all over the world on tour. What perspective does that conflation of identities give you that helps you see things differently? How do you see the world through that lens in a way that other people don't?
Well, I think what I was thinking when I wrote that in my bio was I was sort of trying to talk about some of the underlying themes of my work.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times the stories I do tell are informed by being queer and trans, being from Hawaii, being an Asian American person while I travel, because some of the things that I can't control, besides, you know, how people experience my work is, how, you know, sort of some of the things I carry in physical presentation. So, folks, interacting with each other and mm-hmm. with me, based on maybe some, like, being visibly queer, or certainly for me, it's being Chinese American, Asian American.
Right.
So I was sort of trying to say that in that line in my bio.
And would you say that that does indeed run through your poetry?
It does. It's hard for me. It's hard for me to sort of shut off parts of my identity, or the traveling part is part of my work. So
right.
it's hard for me to not always be thinking about, like, the everyday life that I live, and the everyday life that I live is experienced through all of those things. And so it's hard not to somehow touch the subject matter, even if I'm not writing about them explicitly.
Right.
Yeah, I don't exactly sit down and say, every time I write, I'm going to write a poem about being a queer and trans person in a car driving from, you know.
That's a lot of pressure.
Tennessee.
It's too much pressure.
It's too much pressure. Absolutely.
Although I have to tell you, I feel like the pressure is so off me right now, writing poetry from here on out. Now that I know there's no such thing as bad poetry, I am feeling no pressure whatsoever. Now, you did mention traveling, and I know that you do a lot of college gigs, and I'm the dean of students at a college, so those environments are pretty important to me. What does performing on college campuses and speaking to college students, how do those environments differ from non-college gigs? Why do you like doing those?
Well, I absolutely love doing them because a lot of times I get to interact with students in a different way. If I'm traveling somewhere and staying an entire day
mm-hmm.
with folks, then we get to spend time not only in that performance mode, but talking, and people are asking lots of questions because they're sort of in that academic mindset
mm-hmm.
of studying and deconstructing and analyzing. So I find that it's really great to time sort of answering some of the questions that I have, try to answer for my with questions about art and identity, the intersection of those things, traveling, how, as an artist, or folks bring their own work to the table. I travel to a university or a college and do not only like a Q&A or maybe like a lecture type of thing, but also a workshop where we're actually taking other people's work and, like I said, yeah, no bad poetry.
Right.
And putting them in a workshop mode and experiencing performance, like, in a setting that is pretty fluid. Like, we can actually sit down and visit their pieces with, in a large group. So those things are really rewarding to me, sort of passing on some of the knowledge that I've garnered.
Oh, that sounds great. Now, I have to tell you, I know nothing about, and I assume it is a pageant, the Mr. Transman pageant. I know nothing about it. But you apparently are the first ever Mr. Transman 2010.
I guess I am. I'm not surprised you about it. I mean, it was only in New York.
Hey, I'm a New Yorker. That stuff's important to me. Did you get a sash?
I did get a sash, and it's held together with rainbow yarn.
Look at that. I'm sure there are so many other important parts to the pageant, but I've boiled it down to whether or not you got a sash.
I actually have two sashes. One has my name on it, and the other has the title.
Wow. Well, that's just overdone. I mean, that's going a bit too far, isn't it?
I know. It's pretty awesome.
That's just indulgent. Two sashes. Did you go to the 2011 pageant?
I did go. I passed on. I didn't pass on my sash because they didn't do sashes the next year. They mixed it up. They did trophies.
Okay. I prefer a sash.
You know, I do too.
There you go.
You can't wear a trophy.
No. No.
I mean, I guess you could, but it would be a little...
That's like a metaphor. I don't even... I think we could somehow turn that into a metaphor. You can't wear a trophy. I'm trying to help for the next poem.
Nice trophies.
Okay. All right. I prefer the sash. Hey, we do have to talk about your musical selections for this week's episode. Now, this is one of my favorite things about doing the show, is when folks request music that I absolutely do not know. And I did not know any of these songs. This is great. No, I love it. This is the part of the show, Kit, where you tell our listening audience what some of your song selections say about Kit Yan. It's a little self-analysis for our listening audience. You could even do it in the third person if that makes you more comfortable. It's whatever makes you more comfortable in that horrible climate that you have to suffer through right now. So we're going to do all three because I don't know any of these. This is very exciting. So we'll start out. What does Barton Hollow by the Civil Wars say about Kit Yan?
That was my very emo selection.
Nice.
They're like this new band that I really like, and I've been trying to write some sadder pieces, so I've been listening to a lot of sad music.
Okay.
And I think that song is about going back to a place, like home, like a place of home for the person singing it.
Yeah.
That's what I took from the song, and I was going home, so I've been listening to that song a lot.
That's your headspace right now. That's where you are.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. All right, next one. What does Fast As I Can by Erin McEwen say about Kit Yan?
Well, I think she's talking about non-traditional forms of success and success as a traveling artist, so that's definitely that's an easy one.
That was an easy one. All right, there we go. We like that. We would like that to manifest every day. And then the last one, and you're going to have to pronounce the artist because I don't want to get this wrong, because I've already learned subtly through this interview that I don't even pronounce the state that you're in correctly. What does This Is the Life, and tell everyone who sings This Is the Life?
Kolohe Kai.
I would have gotten that right. Kolohe Kai, what does This Is the Life say about Kit Yan?
That's just a feel-good song about, like, hanging out, going to the beach. Living in Hawaii. It's just it's a song about feeling good, living in Hawaii, living the life.
Now, I'm taking that you are very inspired by your surroundings right now, because you are working on a new project, are you not?
I am. I came here to Hawaii to finish a project.
Okay.
I've been working for the last year and a half, 2 years, on a play about traveling. So I came to Hawaii to work to finish it, but I've just been going to the beach every day.
There's no one at the end of the day checking your work? There's no one who's saying, Kit, I need this many pages by the end of the day?
No.
Do you need our listening audience to serve in that role? Because they will harass you like there's no tomorrow. I can sick them on you. Trust me.
Please send me a Twitter every day to ask me if I've worked on it. I need the listeners to help me be a work top because I'm having a hard time.
Well, it just means you're not in that headspace yet. You're still soaking in the surroundings. So that's okay. That's okay. Do you have like a timeline that you have to work on? Or are you one of those, you know, when it comes to me, it's going to come to me?
Yeah, more like that. But I'm trying to finish it before I head back to New York.
Okay.
So hopefully I'll have something, even if it's rough, done.
Okay. We're feeling confident. I am speaking on behalf of the entire listening audience. We're confident it's going to be done by the time you go back to New York. That's not tomorrow, right?
Thank you so much. I really needed that.
Okay. I'm here to help. It's a confidence boost. That's what we do this show for. Now, where can folks go to learn more about all the cool things that you're doing?
Well, I've got a website. It's kityanpoet.com, but I'm very available on Twitter and Facebook. And kityanpoet is my Twitter name as well. And kityan on Facebook. I'm always updating.
I'm a little floored. I must say that you are a Twitter person, because I would think, and this is where you can prove me wrong, that you would find it so limiting.
Well, I guess like poetry is sort of like a short form anyways, so I do actually like the limitation of Twitter.
Look at that. I can't do it. There's no way I could limit myself to so few characters.
I think it's kind of challenging and fun.
Okay. All right, we're going to have to follow you on Twitter to see what's going on, and then we'll start harassing you and saying, where are the pages by the time you get back to New York? When do you return to the mainland?
My next show is on February 2nd in Portland, Oregon, but I might do a quick jump to New York before I go there. I'm not sure yet.
All right, so February 2nd in Portland, Oregon. Everybody needs to check you out there. And on your website, I assume there are tour dates and all that fun stuff?
Yeah. Oh, actually, my next show is in Hawaii. I totally forgot. I'm totally on vacation. I'm doing a show here next week on Thursday.
Look at that. See, if we didn't do this on this show, you wouldn't even have shown up. This is good that we cover this information, kids.
That's possibly true.
Well, then you're welcome. You're welcome. Any exciting New Year's plans?
I haven't checked in with my family, but I'm sure we're doing something fun.
Lovely. Kit, it is an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I have to tell you, each guest that we have just brings out a different segment of our listening population. And you really, I'm sure you know this, you have some hardcore fans who just love your work. So we were thrilled to get all these requests to have you on the show. And then obviously, triple as thrilled to have you actually call into the show. An absolute pleasure having you on our airwaves.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Thank you so much for having me. And I love my community, and I love all the communities that, you know, I'm able to be a part of and travel to. So it's such a pleasure to get to talk to you and to know that there are folks out there.
Kit, get off the beach and go start writing right now. How was that? That was me being stern. I've never done that on this show before. Did that work for you?
No.
All right. Well, I tried. Kit, the most amazing New Year's to you. Keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on the show.
Thanks, Kit.
All right, Happy New Year.
To you,
bye.
Too. So a few days ago, I was tooling around online collecting stories for this week's show, and I stumbled across an op-ed on advocate.com entitled, "Let Your Money Talk to Help LGBT Organizations." It really piqued my interest, and I dropped the author a line. And here to talk about that op-ed is Jimmy Nguyen, a nationally recognized award-winning lawyer, new media expert, LGBT leader, diversity advocate, commentator, and motivational speaker. Hey, Jimmy, welcome to the show, Is So Gay.
Thanks. I'm so happy to be on This Is So Gay.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So get us started. How did you come to write this piece? Where did this piece come from?
Well, I do a regular series of op-eds for the Advocate magazine's website. So I'm always thinking about what are some pressing issues to talk about for the LGBT community. And one issue I have confronted myself is this question about raising money for LGBT nonprofit organizations. And that's because for the last number of years until recently, I served on the board of directors for Equality California. Mm-hmm. And as any LGBT organization board member knows, part of your duty is to go out and raise funds for the organization. And in the process of doing that, I would notice people giving me different reasons for why they weren't inclined to contribute money to Equality California or other organizations. And it made me wonder, what's going on with that? Why is that the case? And then on top of that, there was this recent study by the Movement Advancement Project, which studies the fiscal health of LGBT organizations. And when I saw that, data reflecting that less than 3% as an estimate of LGBT adults in the United States give money to the national LGBT organizations, it really prompted me to write something about it, since it's something I've confronted on a daily basis being immersed in LGBT organizations. And then seeing this data made me think this is worth talking about.
Does the 3% feel right to you? I'm not doubting the study. It just, gosh, I read that and thought, holy cow, that's really low.
It is really low. It is, by definition, according to the report from the Movement Advancement Project, an estimate, because there's no clear data about the number of LGBT adults in the United States.
Right.
So based upon just an estimate of what our community population size is, and then taking into account the number of donors individuals who contribute money to the national LGBT organizations, which were studied in this research. So it's not all of them. I think it's about 40 that were the main organizations. So I do think it feels about right, honestly, because, yeah. You know, from my experience of going out and asking people to contribute money, it's the same pool of people who tend to contribute to all of the various organizations. They get asked over and over again. They either have the interest, the monetary means, the relationships with people on boards, that it's, I feel like I'm asking the same pool of people who get hit up
right.
by, you know, 3, 4, 5 different organizations at any one time.
Well, let's go through some of those reasons, some of the reasons you've encountered, and I'm not going to go through all them because we want folks to go over to advocate.com and read the piece in its entirety. But a couple of the ones that stood out for me, because perhaps, Jimmy, they're ones that I have said in the past. So let's go through a couple. I give with my time, Jimmy, not with my money. What do you have to say to that?
Perfectly good response, and I want more people in our community to give of their time. The organizations need volunteers and talent and service, but at the end of the day, all organizations require money to operate. While I think we want to encourage people to donate time, we need to give them some cash.
There you go.
The bottom line. It's, you know, let's just be blunt about it. Organizations need money to keep their doors open and do their good work.
Another one of yours was about money going towards overhead. And so it turns it a little bit because we know that they need money, but I've often said, well, I'm not exactly sure what difference my money is making, which is kind of a riff on one of the points you make of folks who express frustration or concern that money is only going towards overhead. And what would you say to those people?
I've noticed the comments that have been posted on the site since the article went up, and that is one of the most common reactions for people who feel like the LGBT organizations at the national level are getting too much money.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a legitimate concern. We should all be questioning how our money is used when we're giving it to an organization. But as someone who knows a lot of the people who work at the nonprofit organizations, you have to pay for salaries,
right.
pay for offices. You to get the top people or people with any good talent to run the organizations, you have to pay them. And while I hear criticisms that the, you know, executive directors and leaders of the organizations get paid a lot of money, the reality is they could all make a lot more money doing similar things in the private sector. So I don't think people choose those career paths because they're looking to make the most money in the world. And to attract any good talent to lead positions, you're going to have to pay people something that's commensurate with the difficulties of the job and the talent. So I understand there's a perfectly legitimate concern that you want your money to go to the good work of an organization, not just to pay people's salaries. But the reality is that work can't happen without paying for some of the overhead.
Yeah. And then the one that just really stood out to me is the one of folks who say, I can't decipher between all the LGBT organizations. Because I have to tell you, since I sent an email to you a few days ago, just yesterday alone, in my inbox, I got 4 asks for money, and I want to support all of them. One was from the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund. One was for Marco Leas, who's running for Congress out in Washington, who's been on the show, who we love enormously. The Whitman Walker Health Center, trying to raise money for HIV and AIDS work, and from Ray Carey at the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. And love them all, you know, all great organizations, but was overwhelmed. This was just yesterday, getting 4 different emails. I wasn't sure how to even sit down and prioritize.
I hear you. I'm one of the people who gets, like you, all those emails as well. It's a little overwhelming, and it makes you feel bad because you feel like, A, I have to figure out, well, what's the difference between all of these different organizations, and B, where, how do I say yes to some and no to others?
Right.
And so my advice is, you know, get to know some organizations and which one, what the kind of work they do, and you're just going to have to pick. That's the reality. Most people don't have enough money just to write checks to every organization that asks them. And I've made the own personal choice over the last few years to say, okay, what are the organizations that advance the things most near and dear to my heart?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to decide to write a check to those organizations. And when people ask me from other organizations, unless there's a really compelling reason or a really good friend who's asking me and I want to support, I just decline and say, I support your organization. There's other ways I can help you, but I've decided to, you know, funnel my monetary contributions to X and figure out what that is for you. But it's a perfectly legitimate concern, particularly this time of year, at the end of the year, when people are flooded with emails and requests and phone calls to donate money to the nonprofits before, you know, the tax year ends. it can be, it's, you know, it's like alphabet soup out there. It can be really confusing.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So just figure out what is most vital in terms of your interest in supporting LGBT causes, and it's a perfectly okay to announce that you're just going to contribute to those organizations and not to all the others. And it may make you feel bad at first, but after a while, you'll get used to saying it.
Right. I kind of want to write to some of the other ones and say, just FYI, I did give to this other guy, if that makes you feel any better, but I don't know that that makes anyone feel any better.
It doesn't make anyone feel any better, but I think the people who run the organizations and the board members, they recognize that. They know that certain people get asked over and over again. And the whole point of the article is that we need to get beyond that small pool of donors that everyone else in the LGBT community, the other 97%, as I call them, should start giving something. And it won't be $1,000 or $10,000 like some of the major donors do, or even higher. But, you know, if it's $50 a year, I think it will help the organizations to demonstrate there's a lot of grassroots support at multiple levels, lots of different people helping and contributing. And if more of that 97% did that, I think it would help the organization become much more financially strong and allow them to do a lot more good work.
So as someone who has asked folks, so turning this, I know the audience for the piece were those 97%, but for those folks who are out there working for nonprofits, local or national, who are doing the asks, who are writing these emails, what advice do you have for them? Because I have to say, the four emails that I received yesterday, four very different tracks of asking me for money. Some were very personal, some were very, these are the services that we provide. Some told the story of someone that I'm sure is real, that I was very affected by their story and wanted to support that. What are some great methods for folks who are out there asking for money? What would you recommend to them?
I would definitely recommend focusing on emotional touchstones that will drive people to give money. Not that we want to all have bleeding heart emails in our inbox all the time, but emotion, of course, works. Compelling personal stories, that's what moves us as human beings, as, you know, a communication method. But also, I think people making the ask, either by email or in person, should address some of the points I raised in the article, which is, how do you address people's concerns that not enough of their money goes to good work?
Right.
So I would put in emails information about how much of the money that the organization estimates goes to overhead versus funding particular projects, right? I think potential givers want to know that. I think to the extent that money is used to support local initiatives, even if it's a national organization, people would want to know that. One of the most common responses I've gotten on comments to the article is, well, what about the local and regional LGBT organizations, which were not measured in this particular study? And they deserve support as well. And I think people like to support their local community. So if I were sending out those emails, I would try to have message points about how some of that money is funneled to support local initiatives, particularly an email where you can, if you have information about people's locations, you can target emails sometimes. Same thing with social media. So I would focus on those things to address those legitimate concerns. And maybe I would also work harder in communication pieces to differentiate my organization from others. Why am I unique? Not that you're competing against other organizations, but you want to identify what is your brand. What does this organization work for that is different and worthy of a contribution?
Look at that. Look how your article is a blueprint for everybody.
Well, I'm not sure it's a blueprint for everyone, but hopefully it's achieved the trick of engaging a dialogue about this whole issue, and that it will make both the community members more informed about what I feel is their obligation to support LGBT organizations financially, whatever level it is, national, regional, or local, and then hopefully people at the organizations themselves thinking about how do I reach potential donors better to address their concerns.
Well, judging by the comments section, you certainly got people talking.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I didn't think it was that controversial of a point, but I have, you know, seen some of the comments, and people are definitely reacting very strongly. I think it's brought out...
We love that.
Exactly. It's brought out, I think, a visceral feeling in the community members about how they feel about these big organizations, and I think some people just don't like the big organizations, and I can understand their feelings, but those big organizations exist for a purpose, and they do good work, and while they could always improve and certainly should be subject to our, you know, scrutiny. I found it surprising how negative some people have a reaction to the biggest of the organizations.
I love when that happens.
Now tell everyone, why should we go over to jimmywin.com? That's WIN.com.
That's right. Well, thank you for the plug. Basically, that is my website at which I write about and talk about a whole variety of issues, not just in the LGBT community, but also dealing with law and politics, race and diversity, and some new media topics. I've had this life experience where I've always grown up being the person who's different. I was an immigrant, a racial minority, and the gay kid. And, you know, I woke up to a point in life where you realize that the experience of being different is something that we all have, whether we're gay or not, or a racial minority or not. There's something about each of us that's different, and rather than running away from that, I'm encouraging everybody to shine their differences. And so I write about a whole variety of topics there, and so if any of your listeners want to come check me out at jimmywin.com, I would love to have them read my work.
And the big adversity that you are encountering right now, and that is weather adversity, which I must be very difficult for you today. The weather.
That is true,
yeah.
Because I get to talk to you today and your listeners from sunny Puerto Vallarta in Mexico. So it is almost New Year's, so it is a real adversity for me compared to you in snowy Vermont.
Yeah, on behalf of the whole community, we really admire how you're just sticking with weather patterns and really making your way through it. So
yeah, I'm
tough it out, Jimmy. Tough
right
it out.
In Puerto Vallarta here.
Jimmy, a great piece. Looking forward to more pieces. And let's have you back on the show, and we'll talk about more writing.
I would love to.
An absolute pleasure having you on the show, Jimmy. Everybody, go over to advocate.com. Check out this piece. A happy new year to you, sir.
Happy new year to you as well. Here's to a great 2012 for all of us.
All the best, Jimmy. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Tonight woke I in a strange bed. Strange bed of fellows, strange. Tonight found I in a strange bed. Strange bed of fellows, strange. Said it to me, oh, you'll be alright. Oh, said it to me, oh, you'll be alright. In a strange bed. Strange bed, the bed fell strange. Said it to me, what they've always said. Said it to me, what I've always heard. You're gonna make it, you're gonna make it, you're gonna make it, girl. You're gonna make it, you're gonna make it, you're gonna make it, girl. Girl, you sleep with success. Girl, you sleep with success. Well, tonight.
All right, folks, and we are back yet again. I am joined by Tanya.
I'm laughing already.
I feel like in some ways it feels like it's been years since you've been here. In other ways, it feels like it was just yesterday.
It does. I totally understand what you
like
mean.
Like just yesterday. Let me just say this. When, not if, but when there is the This Show Is So Gay behind the music.
Oh my gosh.
It is going to be, people are going to think, oh, it sounded so flawless. I had no idea the drama that went into that particular episode. They will never know. They will never know.
It's going to be great. And I'm looking forward to the bloopers part too.
Oh, yeah. This Show Is So Gay gag reel. And when, not if, but when this podcast is actually posted, it will be, I think, a victory for the gay community.
Definitely.
For Michigan.
It is a victory for Michigan.
And I think really for my grandmother, Alice Bess in Dumont, New Jersey. Just want to put that out there. Do
Shout
you even
out.
Know the last time you were on this show?
No.
I do. I looked it
oh
up.
Oh my gosh, because you had some time to.
What? You know, you have, would you even take a guess? Because I was totally wrong.
I'm going to guess April.
No, do you know it was actually November of 2010.
Oh, that was much further back.
I know. So, but Tanya, you're on the website. If people go to thisshowsogay.com and click on About, you are now, where are you living?
I'm living in Vermont.
So now it's easy to move to Vermont.
I did move to Vermont, and I have green license plates on my truck, which makes me feel like I really belong.
I never would I have thought that a past co-host would have moved to Vermont to co-host this show.
I know, it's dedication.
It's dedication.
We both have it.
I agree.
I think you have it in spades.
Seriously, this podcast is a vindication for gay people everywhere. Michigan.
You have no idea.
And my grandmother. Okay, so much to talk about.
Yes.
And things that will surprise you. I can guarantee there will be things that surprise you. We're going to start in the politics world.
All right. Because we know I have been on vacation.
You have been on vacation.
And so my head has been in the Christmas pudding.
That's like a euphemism.
In terms of news.
We're going to get your head out of the Christmas pudding. But I think that some of these candidates for the Republican presidential nominee.
Happy holidays.
Yeah. So we have three choices. I'll let you call where we start.
All right.
We will talk about all three. Newt Gingrich. Mm-hmm. Ron Paul mm-hmm. or Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, let's start with Michelle Bachmann. Ladies first.
Okay, but we'll start with Michelle instead. So, it's the final days leading up to the Iowa presidential mm-hmm. caucus. This is coming up in just a few days. So Michelle Bachmann's got to set herself apart.
She really does.
And she knows it. And so, of course, to set herself apart, she says just how anti-gay she is.
That really sets her apart from everyone else.
Not only does it not set her apart, but it's really just so sad that that's a method.
That's her big plan.
That was the big strategy
around the table.
At a campaign stop this past Tuesday in Council Bluffs, which I assume is a place in Iowa, and I assume they listen to our show, she sought to set herself apart from the rest of the Republican field, and she said, quote, Mitt Romney has defended gay marriage and even signed marriage licenses for same-sex couples, and Ron Paul doesn't believe the government should protect the institution of marriage. I have a record of defending life, marriage, and the family, and I'll protect them. As president of the United States.
Life. She defends life.
She defends the unborn
life. The unborn life.
I think is what she... Not if they are then born and gay.
Right.
No.
No defense.
She does not defend them. But if they are unborn and gay, she defends them.
I think that would be life in quotation marks, actually.
You would think so. So that's Michelle Bachmann.
Wow.
Would you like to move to Ron Paul or Newt Gingrich?
Well, how about Ron Paul? Because she mentioned him.
She did not mention Newt Gingrich.
No.
She mentioned Ron Paul. So Ron Paul, a couple things that are setting him apart. So first, he's got his newsletter. So the big drama with his newsletter is that it had all these anti-gay things in it, but he's saying he didn't write it. And now this dude who's got a Twitter handle of RP_newsletter, mm-hmm. he has started to put together all of the anti-gay things that are in these newsletters, and he tweets them.
Wow.
He tweets them.
He has to read all the newsletters.
I know, which really, but it saves us the trouble.
We
get the cliff notes in reverse order. I will, from newest first, because it's more entertaining when I find when I read them in reverse order. So these are quotes from the Ron Paul newsletter, apparently not written by Ron Paul. Put it all together, and you've got another wave of AIDS infections that you, dear taxpayer, will be asked to pay for. Third, we'll get to first and second in a minute. Third, they, and I assume that's the gays, mm-hmm. they enjoy the attention and pity that comes with being sick. Second, because sex is the center of their lives, they want it to be as pleasurable as possible, which means unprotected sex.
Huh.
These conditions do not make one's older years the happiest. They are not married, they have no children, and their lives are centered on new sexual partners.
Oh my gosh.
And first... Oh, this is like a Letterman top 10 list.
Oh,
I'm doing this in order. And first, these men, and I assume that's who the they is. This has nothing to do with you.
Okay.
These men, the gays, I inserted that.
Yes.
These men don't really see a reason to live past their 50s.
Wow.
I do.
I was just going to ask if that's news to you.
Yeah,
you were just waiting for someone to say it so clearly.
No, I want to be 51. I heard that's just a glorious time for gay men. I'm out at 49. Later.
Bye.
Bye. Have a good time.
Thanks. I'll keep it going for you.
Yeah.
In memoriam.
He didn't say anything about how long lesbians want
it's
to live.
It's probably only about 55.
I would assume.
Imagine. Yeah, right, it can't be that much longer.
Who would want to? With all the gay men dead at 49.
I know, there's no reason to party anymore.
Yes. And how egotistical that I assumed at 49, when I die, then everyone else has 6 more years and then it's over.
Right.
But that's okay. We'll talk about that another day.
So I wonder if he's, you know, because he said they don't want to have protected sex. So is he, you know, a big condom advocate and birth control pill advocate?
You know, he's just, I don't know, because he didn't write the newsletter.
Yeah, so he doesn't know either.
He doesn't know either. We don't know. Now, the other, more Ron Paul news, his Iowa chair, Drew Ivers, recently, and we've talked about Drew before because he said some really interesting things, but Drew recently touted the endorsement of Reverend Philip G. Kaiser, a pastor at the Dominion Covenant Church in Nebraska, who also draws members from Iowa. I assume that those two states are near each other.
Geography lesson.
Are they?
I'm guessing.
You do math. You don't know.
I know.
So, Reverend Philip G. Kaiser. So, this Iowa chair, Drew Ivers, he praised, quote, the enlightening statements he makes on how Ron Paul's approach to government is consistent with Christian beliefs. But here's the thing, Tanya. Mm. Kaiser's views, Reverend Kaiser, I shouldn't be rude, the Reverend Kaiser.
The Reverend.
His views on homosexuality go way beyond the bounds of typical anti-gay evangelical politics.
Wow.
And perhaps a little bit into the violent fringe. He said, quote, difficulty in implementing biblical law does not make non-biblical penology just. But as we have seen, while many homosexuals would be executed, the threat of capital punishment can be restorative. Biblical law would recognize as a matter of justice that even if this law could be enforced today, homosexuals could not be prosecuted for something that was done before. Let me do that Cliff Notes version.
Oh my gosh.
Kill gay people.
What is wrong?
But Ron Paul didn't say that.
Ron Paul
it
didn't
wasn't
say
in
that.
The newsletter, and it's just this, the Reverend Philip G. Kaiser.
It's just his
It's really
pal.
Unbelievable. So that's Ron Paul.
Wow.
Following on the heels of Michelle Bachmann, which only leaves Newt Gingrich.
All right. Bring it on.
Newt Gingrich has a new set of policies. He has a new set of policies that he's putting out on his website. He's calling them day one policies. These are the things that starting on day number one, he is going to do in the White House.
You think he'll start at 9 or 8?
This is slated for 10.
Oh,
this
10.
Is slated for 10 a.m.
I
put it out
there.
Do a little decorating, maybe get a new White House pet. And then at 10 a.m., this is what he says. The mission of the Religious Freedom Commission, this is what he wants to establish, the Religious Freedom Commission, will be to advise the president on issues that threaten or impede the religious freedom that all Americans enjoy as an unalienable right from our Creator, capital C, which the First Amendment to the Constitution explicitly protects. In examining and investigating threats or impediments to religious freedom, the Religious Freedom Commission should examine and investigate the following. Two items. Number one, the extent to which courts throughout the U.S. are undermining the First Amendment and misconstruing the historical basis for religious freedom in America, and even more applicable to our show. Number two, the extent to which schools from primary to university level are discriminating against religious viewpoints, restricting religious expression, or forcing students to violate their conscience by forcibly imposing beliefs about sexual orientation, gender, same sex, and it's in quotes, marriage, and abortion, to which students have constitutionally protected religious objections. And it says here in parentheses, or that might just be what I typed in, hate speech and bullying, that's okay. I don't know that might have, it's hard for me to tell because I'm reading from my screen. I don't know if I typed that in or if Ron Paul did.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, he won't
probably
know
didn't.
Either.
He did. It was just in his newsletter with his picture and his name on it. But yes.
Wow.
So this is from day one. Newt Gingrich wants to establish the Religious Freedom Commission because he does not feel it's fair that people can't say hate speech or bully. In the name of religion.
In the name of his, in the name of Christianity.
In the name
I'm
of
assuming.
I didn't even know there were other religions.
Not in this state, there
no,
are.
No, no.
Over
and
there.
As a gay Jew, that's so weird for me that I didn't know there were other religions.
Wow,
but according to Newt Gingrich.
As a gay Jew, you're really going down. I mean, you'll be glad you're only going to be here till 40.
I only have 15 more, is that right? 15 more years, and then that's it. I'm out.
Wow.
So that's what Newt Gingrich, if you're wondering.
10:45.
I think he can knock it off by 10:34. I'm just saying.
We'll see.
He really wants to cut down on waste in government, so I don't know why
there
won't
be any pastries or anything for this meeting.
You know what I was watching? I was watching this morning. Were you a Saturday Night Live watcher?
Oh, yes.
Victoria Jackson.
Oh, yes.
Have you heard how off the deep end this woman has gone?
I can picture her.
I rather enjoyed Victoria Jackson. Victoria Jackson has gone off the deep end. Oh. And I actually, maybe other people are saying this, I actually think it's a put on. I don't think she's doing this for real. But she is on, she's got this new little web series called Politichicks.
Mm-hmm.
Or Politichicks. I don't know. But yep. I think it's Politichicks, where she says the most hateful, anti-gay, anti-Muslim, anti-human, unless they're unborn. I mean, she really is. I was watching this morning. She was on the Joy Behar show, and I was watching the Politichicks. She really says horrible things.
I wonder if it
isn't
put on, because there are a few folks who've been doing that, who created online TV shows.
And I don't want to minimize. I'm not looking to minimize how hateful the stuff that she is saying, because it's terrible. It is terrible. But I can't believe that this woman has come out of... Anyway, people should go look up what Victoria Jackson...
And if it's not clear that it's a put-on, then, and it is, then it's only doing harm as well.
It's a little nutty. Wow. It's a little nutty. In the Hollywood... Well, we'll stay with Hollywood. I know your dreams have been dashed.
Whoosh.
Because I think it says, if you go to thisshowsogay.com and click on About and go down, scroll down to Tanya's bio, you can see right there, Tanya, huge, huge Twilight
fan. Huge center of my life posters. Has gotten
fired from more jobs than we would care to admit, because she's like, I can't come to work. I'm at the Twilight premiere.
Exactly.
So your hopes, well, I would assume that your hopes were kept somewhat alive then.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
Because should the People magazine cover that proclaimed Taylor Lautner. Mm-hmm.
Not that I know for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame.
Mrs. Taylor Lautner. Oh,
with little fangs on it. Because he's
Hearts
a werewolf. Yeah. I totally watched The Vampire Diaries. That's part of it. So, yes. Should that have, the People magazine cover that proclaimed him to be out and proud, should that have not been a fake?
Then there's still hope for me.
There is still hope for you.
And even if it is true, then we can be pals.
You can be special pals.
We can be special pals.
Special pals.
But yeah, yes, that was a beautiful cover.
It was a beautiful cover.
Yep.
It had Brad and Angelina in Africa.
Yes.
And Carney Wilson.
Yay, Carney.
Oh, God.
Shout out to Wilson Phillips.
If I could get a member of Wilson Phillips on this show, I don't think we can get China, because I think China is also quite religious.
Yeah. I think you might be right.
I've read that.
Maybe they all are.
I watched an episode of Wife Swap. Is that what it's called?
I've seen the commercials.
Where Carney Wilson, swaps houses with Tracy Gold from Growing Pains.
Wow.
I know.
What does Tracy Gold look like? I mean,
Tracy Gold's got a new show that's very controversial, and I can't remember why. Tracy Gold looks good. And Tracy Gold had the whole thing with the eating disorder.
Yes. That's right.
And Tracy Gold's sister, Missy Gold, who used to be on Benson. Uh-huh. I have so much useless knowledge.
Benson.
Remember when we used to talk about LGBT news on the show today? I don't care. I don't need to talk about that. All right. But we have a couple more stories to cover, because we have to go to Planned Parenthood.
Yay!
Which is very important to you, and tell everybody why.
Because I will soon be working for them sometime in the very new year.
That's really exciting.
I know. It's very exciting. I'm going to learn how to draw blood.
You're going to be...
A phlebotomist.
Has never been said technically on this show ever before.
I know. It creeps me out. I have two fears. One is snakes, and one is... phlebotomy.
What if Planned Parenthood says to you one day, you come into the office and they say, we think that we discovered a new form of blood that will prevent all pregnancies and STIs, and we need you to extract it from this snake.
I will have to say no. Oh my gosh, I'm going to not save the world.
You already lost your job for attending the Twilight premiere, and now because you won't take blood from the snake, Your standards are weird.
They are. I am.
You're weird.
I'm considering going to hypnotherapy, though, to get over my issue with phlebotomy.
But you should throw in the snakes, too.
I thought that's what I would do while I'm there on the couch. I'd just be... Say, well, you know, there's also this snake thing. So if one could just slither through while I'm tying the tourniquet, that would be
great. The worst hypnotherapist that has ever been invented.
Yeah.
But our quick shout out to Planned Parenthood. There was this story that I thought was an actual story, but it turned out to be from a conservative Christian website about how
That isn't actual news.
Yes, except that it wasn't actual news because it was a Planned Parenthood in New York. They were decrying a Planned Parenthood in New York that asks its teens in their teen awareness program to attend a gay pride parade. Mm-hmm. And this website was pretty flipped out about that. So that's Planned Parenthood. It wasn't actual news, but I thought it was. And then it started talking about the homosexuals. And anytime it says the homosexuals, when the article, I mean, it's fine if you're saying the reverend, but when it says the homosexuals, you know something's awry. And then the other Tanya-related shout-out, Girl Scouts.
Love Girl Scouts. Used to work for them, too.
We will recite, Tanya will recite the Girl Scout mission for you. This is very exciting. You haven't done it in so long.
I will do my best to be honest and fair, friendly and helpful, considerate and caring, courageous and strong, and responsible for what I say and do, and to respect myself and others, respect authority, use resources wisely, make the world a better place, and be a sister to every Girl Scout.
I wish people could actually see. You had to see. She was standing here. She actually stood up, which is a little weird, with her arms crossed and her eyes closed, head bowed a little, and then she sat back down like nothing had happened. That was really impressive. But shout out to the Girl Scouts of Denver, Colorado, and Colorado Girl Scouts of Colorado in general, who have rescinded their earlier decision to disband a troop, not let this troop happen, or not let this trans 7-year-old transgender girl who wished to join this troop into that particular troop. They've let her in, but now some of the leaders have disbanded their groups, not even in Colorado, but in Louisiana, which...
Just because.
I would assume, though, don't ask Tanya and I, those two states aren't even near each
other.
I'm
pretty sure not. I really feel
like... Nebraska and Iowa, maybe, but Colorado and Louisiana. So they said, rather than adhere to this mission of being considerate and caring, courageous and strong, they'd rather disband their troop, and indeed... They disbanded their
troop. Now all those Girl Scouts are just on the streets of Louisiana.
It's really sad. There's
nowhere to go.
They're hawking their cookies, and that's not even a euphemism. that's kind of sad.
It is sad.
They should sell Christmas pudding. So, oddly, this is our last show of 2011.
Oh my gosh.
You made it in just under the wire.
Whoosh.
Not since November of 2010.
That's amazing. Time is weird.
Time is weird.
Wow. It really does go faster when you get older.
Yes, I don't have much time left, so you could not bring up age.
Will slow down. I'm sorry.
Yeah, emotional topic for me, 14 years and counting. Hey, folks, you should, of course, send us an email at ken@thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn about all about the fun things coming up with this show, about all of our co-hosts. Our 150th show is coming up in just 2 weeks. This is show number 148. So that's going to be a big shindig in a couple weeks, and we're really excited for that. And of course, go to the Facebook if you're not named Tanya. Type in "This Show Is So Gay," like us, because we sure as heck like you. And I know that you were worried at some point in time that you would not remember the tagline for this show. But if you were to get this wrong now, it would be even more sad than viewers can know. Please watch the Behind the Music, This Show Is So Gay.
You will not be disappointed.
You will not be disappointed. Folks, get out there. Go do some incredible things. Have the most incredible and safe and healthy, happy, happy New Year.
Mm-hmm.
And while you're celebrating, while you're doing all of those things, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Run and play every time I think of you. Then I wanna go up and sit right down and look at the ocean so blue.